Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share ideas and strategies. I share some of my big epic mistakes and some of my success stories from my own experience. I sometimes interview people or share a blueprint or an idea, but all with this goal of empowering students with voice and choice. And right now, on this topic of student empowerment and creativity, we're getting into what it means to empower readers. We started the series off last week, and we're going to take a deeper dive into it today with this notion that there is no such thing as a reluctant reader. I'm going to start by sharing a story from my own experience as a professor. The students filed into the class discussing the latest TV shows they had binge-watched and swapping stories of their weekends. This was, of course, pre-COVID when we were all meeting in person. And a few of them talked about the challenges of a fast-paced MAT program and how they were balancing it with their full-time jobs. As the class began, I turned on the projector and displayed the warm-up. The directions were simple. Explain what it means to be engaged as a reader. But then there was a small disclaimer under it. You can only use visuals and no text. One student raised her hand. Can I at least write a small explanation on my picture? Or maybe write a few words as connections between ideas? Nope. It needs to be fully sketched out, I explained. You can use symbols, diagrams, arrows, or doodles. And it doesn't have to be artistic. I simply want you to make your thinking visible. Immediately, the environment changed. Students grew anxious. A few of my students began whispering to one another. Reluctantly, they pulled out sheets of paper and began. But one student just stared out aimlessly. Two others got up to get a drink or to use the restroom. A few students scribbled their sketches while guarding their papers. Another student raced to finish the assignment as quickly as possible, only to turn the paper over real fast and cover it with the pencil, as if to signal to everyone that that dreaded warm-up was finished. A few students looked around the room for inspiration. Others raised their hand and asked me if they were doing it correctly. And in one corner of the room, students ditched the warm-up entirely and began talking about their fantasy football teams. Now, when the warm-up ended, I asked students to do a think, pair, share activity. And I asked them to talk about how they felt as they engaged in the assignment. A few students loved it. They felt like it was a chance to speak their language and use their creativity. In fact, they were eager to show their classmates what they had sketched out. But most students, well, they hated the activity. As I wandered the room, the most common words were hated, anxious, annoying, and unsure. Not exactly what you want from an assignment. Afterwards, we deconstructed the activity. I asked students why they felt anxious, angry, and annoyed by this warm-up. Students said things like, I'm not an artist and this isn't my thing. Others said things like, I haven't drawn in years and I felt rusty. Still others described the challenge of working out of their weakness instead of their strengths. I asked students how this activity would be different if our class had been a kindergarten or first grade class. And we discussed the strange phenomenon of growing out of something like drawing or doodling that had once been so enjoyable in early childhood. Next, we talked about how the behaviors we observed during the warm-up and what they actually look like. Things like wandering around the classroom, rushing to finish the assignment, quitting early, putting in less effort, feeling afraid to show others what you'd created, copying from their peers, procrastinating, goofing off, being off topic. And from there, I ask students to relate this warm-up to the behaviors they see when a student is a reluctant reader. It clicked. One student said, "I've been an aide for a few years and I never saw this connection. I just thought the students that I worked with were being lazy." And another student said, I feel like I get the need for scaffolding now. I always secretly wondered if scaffolds were like a crutch for kids. But I would have done so much better if I had seen an exemplar, or if I had a graphic organizer, or if there had been some kind of support for me. What I had designed as a warm-up became a longer, richer discussion about why students were reluctant to read. Students talked about shame, trauma, and self-definition that had led them to say things like, "I'm not an artist." And then they related that to students who felt the same way about reading. Others talked about the role of fear and how it prevented them from putting in the necessary effort in the warm-up. And still others talked about the habit of drawing and the challenges of it being slow, and just the frustration when you feel like you're not fast at something. Now, if we want to empower students to own the reading process, we will have students who hate reading. Some people call them reluctant readers, but I prefer the term reading reluctantly because it focuses on the behavior and not the person. The term reluctant reader feels kind of permanent. But I've never met a truly reluctant reader, only students who are reading reluctantly until they eventually embrace reading and fall in love with the process. So what I want to look at are four different reasons why students might be reluctant to read. And then I want to look at some possible solutions in terms of how we can address these challenges. And I want to point out that these are by no means all of the reasons someone would be reluctant to read, right? This is not an exhaustive list. But these are some of the trends that I have seen in my own classroom when I taught middle school, when I taught reading intervention, but also what I see when I observe other classrooms now as a professor. So I'm going to share the challenges, and then let's address some potential solutions. And I would love for you, if you see the blog post that corresponds to this podcast, to share some of your own strategies that you have found to be helpful as well. So here we go. Challenge number one, they have a negative self-definition as a reader. Now, if we think about the warm-up that I did with my university students, one of the most common responses I got was, "I'm not an artist." Similarly, when I taught middle school, I had students who would define themselves as not being a reader. Part of this was due to socialization. Certain students hung on to negative cultural stereotypes about reading being nerdy, or the awful stereotypes that athletes don't need to read. In some cases, there were even racist stereotypes about African Americans and Latinos and how they weren't supposed to be readers. As a class, we worked toward dismantling these stereotypes. We deconstructed the racism and white supremacy about the arguments that reading was a white thing. I partnered with our librarian and with teachers who were experts in anti-racism to find books that had protagonists who were characters of color, and books that addressed issues of injustice and racism. So my friend Bonnie Hamer, who is an ELA expert, she is a true literacy expert, a curriculum developer, a former high school teacher. She helped dispel some of the myths about who is and isn't a reader, and the answer is everyone can be a reader. By encouraging coaches, custodians, social workers, and other community members to share their favorite books in her weekly book talks that she did with her high school students. These book talks tended to be short and highly personal. The book talks centered on how the reader connected with the text itself. The goal wasn't to do a book report, and it wasn't even a book review. It was simply a book talk, where readers offered a recommendation based on things like whether they found the plot interesting or whether they liked the characters. And she extended this process to her students as well. And it helped develop that definition of the whole class community as being readers. In some cases, students have a negative self-definition due to negative past experiences. Many students have defined success as being a fast reader. In early elementary school, we tend to place students in reading groups based on fluency scores. Students might even set reading fluency goals and have celebrations for how fast they read. It might be something like an accelerated reader program where students can earn, you know, all these different rewards based on how much they read and how quickly they read. But in the process, students who read slowly internalize the notion that they aren't a good reader. And, you know, in these moments, I found that it helps to allow students to just vent about why they dislike reading. One of my friends and a phenomenal literacy expert, Pernille Rip, once wrote, "I hate reading" on the board, and asked students to jot down reasons why they didn't enjoy the reading process. While this might sound like a negative experience, and it might even sound like an activity that would cause students to view reading as a negative thing, it's actually a chance for students to be known and to share their authentic feelings about reading. Sometimes students need to be heard first before they open out. And, you know, in these moments, I found that it helps to allow students to vent about why they dislike reading. Pernille Rip once wrote, "I hate reading" on the board and asked students to jot down reasons why they didn't enjoy the process. Now, she's a phenomenal reading teacher, and she's a true expert in literacy. But this activity might, at first blush, seem like a negative experience. And it might even sound like an activity that would get kids to sort of mull over their negative feelings about reading and reinforce those negative feelings and sort of let people know that reading is inherently not very fun. But I disagree. I actually think that this is a chance for students to be known and to share their authentic feelings about reading. Sometimes students need to be heard first before they even open up to the possibility that reading could be fun. For this reason, it can help to focus less on the love of reading as a process and more on the topics and the stories that they're going to read. As a teacher, you might say, "I know reading isn't your jam," and that's totally fine. Obviously, I want you to love reading, but I can't make you love it. So if you have to read, what topics are you into? What stories excite you? What TV shows do you watch? What movies do you watch? What characters do you find compelling? By starting with TVs, shows, and movies, you can then get students thinking about plot and character. Let them run with their interests as well. Find stories and novels that connect with the things that they're into. In many cases, a student will fall in love with the reading process while still saying things like, "Well, I'm not much of a reader." Instead, they're intrigued by great stories or fantastical worlds or big ideas or characters that they've fallen in love with. Case in point, my brother-in-law struggled with reading. To this day, he'll say things like, "I'm not much of a reader." And yet, he has a book on his Kindle app on his phone and he is always looking at it. He's constantly listening to audiobooks on his drive to work as a lineman. Whether he admits it or not, he has become an avid reader. Ultimately, we as teachers can help students get past the negative self-definition by building a relationship with students and giving them more autonomy in their reading journey. This begins with providing a significant amount of time for independent reading. But it also happens when we nerd out on the reading process in a way that's inclusive and not snobbish. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I initially mocked books with sparkly vampires. I wanted my students to love good literature, and I viewed myself as this like gatekeeper who would lead them toward what real literacy should be. Now I just want them to be critical readers, whether it's Native Son or Diary of a Wimpy Kid. As teachers, we can find ways to celebrate reading in a way that focuses less on reading levels and more on the inherent joy of immersing oneself in a story. Challenge number two, they find reading boring. Now, students might think reading is boring because they didn't connect with it in the past. I love the quote from James Patterson who wrote, "There's no such thing as a kid who hates reading. There are kids who love reading and kids who are reading the wrong books. As teachers, we can help students find the right books by creating an exploratory period where they can discover all kinds of different books." In our last podcast episode, I talked about book talks and book show and tell activities, library scavenger hunts, first chapter Fridays, and all of these can be ways to introduce students to new books. This exploratory phase empowers students by honoring their agency as learners. They get to decide what books they want to read. But at the same time, you as a teacher get the opportunity to expose them to new authors and stories and genres that they may have never discovered on their own. It can feel counterintuitive, but sometimes the answer is to teach students how to quit books that aren't working for them. A student might just need to abandon 10 or 20 different books after reading less than a chapter of each one. However, I'd rather have a situation where they are quitting a bunch of books and then fall in love with one than have a situation where they trudge through and they finish that one book and they absolutely hated it. For some students, the answer might be to find books that connect with their lives and their culture. For others, it might be that they want to read books that expose them to new ideas and other cultures. And for some students, it might mean deep characterization, even if it's a little more slack as a plot. They want to feel that emotional connection, but others might need a fast-paced novel with a very suspenseful plot. It helps to take an everything counts approach. One of the things I regret is that when we first started doing silent reading in my classroom, I would tell them that certain things didn't count. No, you couldn't read below grade level. No, you couldn't read that. No, you couldn't read that. But eventually I switched to this everything counts approach. Graphic novels count. Audiobooks count. Rereading a book counts. Reading above or below your grade level counts. The goal is to get students to discover the joy of reading. Now, there's a little bit of nuance here. There's a time and a place for the whole class novel and for exposing students to the classics, although the definition of the canon should be flexible, malleable, and far more diverse than what is often presented to students. We'll explore this in an upcoming podcast episode, the idea of reading together. But if we want students to fall in love with reading, we need to give them a chance to discover what books they want to read. Even so, even when they find books that they might be into, sometimes they just haven't developed the habit of long extended periods of time reading. Which leads to the next challenge. Challenge number three, some students have low reading endurance. When I first transitioned into self-contained, teaching all subjects to one group of students, I took a gamble with reading, and I took a gamble based on what I had done as a reading intervention teacher. My students would spend 40 minutes a day doing independent reading. After reading the books, Read Aside and The Book Whisperer, I made the decision to devote more time to reading and less time for doing reading-related assignments. In other words, more reading, less work. This schedule left us only 45 minutes for things like book clubs and creative writing responses, whole class read alouds, all those other activities. I wanted at least as close as possible to half of the reading time to be silent, independent reading. And I watched as students grew into independent readers. I observed their gains in reading comprehension and critical analysis. but I worried about how that would translate to test scores. To my surprise, my students remained at the top of the district on our benchmark tests. I later analyzed the data and found that my students were in the top one-third for the first 10 questions on the test. They were solid test scores, but nothing impressive. But then they continued to score the same way from the 10th question all the way to the 50th question. In other classes, though, students experienced a sharp drop in their correct answers after those first 10 to 15 questions. Now, I can't prove this, but my hunch is that students in my class had developed reading endurance, while students in certain other classes struggled with this. My students knew how to read silently for a long period of time. It had become a habit. It's not that my students were better readers. Other students had mastered the same standards that mine had. The key difference is that my students were unfazed by long extended reading times. My students didn't begin with strong reading endurance. We had to build up from 5 minutes of silent reading in the first week to 15 in the second week to 25 minutes in the third week to 35 minutes in the fourth week and 45 in the fifth week, and then for the rest of the school year, that's what we did. In many respects, this process felt like gaining endurance and running. Students were essentially out of breath after 5 minutes in the first week of school. They struggled to stay focused on the text and describe the challenges of a wandering mind. Certain students would reread the same paragraph because they kept getting distracted. However, as they practiced reading silently, they developed reading endurance as both a habit and a discipline. And I would argue that that helps develop a lifelong skill of deep work. If you haven't read Cal Newport's book, Deep Work, I highly recommend it. That's what they were doing. They were engaging in that deep work. As teachers, we sometimes need to model these skills for students and even talk through the mental process of staying focused. That's important, right? Students won't necessarily do this naturally. It's also a chance to be vulnerable with your students and admit that there are times when you struggle to stay focused yourself as a reader. And yet, the more students practice staying focused in reading, the easier it becomes to master. Even so, it's not always easy for every student. Students with ADHD, for example, might need some additional accommodations and scaffolds. Some of them, it might take longer to gain that skill. I had one student who would sketch out different parts of the story while listening to an audiobook. For him, the movement and the tactile element helped him stay focused on visualizing the story. Now, this doesn't mean he was an auditory learner or any, you know, research has shown that there's no such thing as, you know, learning styles. For him, it really was an element of a coping strategy to stay focused. So he would sketch out what he was reading and he would make these sketch notes while he would listen to the novel on his headphones. And it absolutely worked for him. All right, challenge number four, the fourth one, is they struggle with key reading skills. Sometimes students struggle with reading because they haven't mastered certain skills. They might have gaps in basic skills like phonics and blending. Other times it might be grammar or syntax. I've seen students who can easily decode text, but they struggle with longer compound sentences that contain multiple phrases or clauses. For others, the challenge relates to language acquisition. They might have a hard time with passive voice or with something like the past progressive verb tense, which we tend to use in writing, but not so often in conversational English. Still, for others, the challenge is with vocabulary and academic language. But it might even be an issue of prior knowledge. If you ask me to read a book about cars or a story that involves a lot of cars and mechanics, I'm not going to know the difference between a V6 and a V8, although I think a V8 is also the name of like a vegetable drink that has a lot of tomatoes, which is actually a fruit. But you get the idea. I'm going to be lost. Now, empowered readers have this ability to enter a state of flow. This is where they hyper-focus on everything that they're doing. They get lost in their reading. Their mind just seems to focus entirely on the story, and they tune out everything around them. And this has been explored in this whole theory of flow, right? Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi was the sort of founder of flow theory. It's something from positive psychology. But one of the things that they came up with is this flow channel model, and it has the challenge level on one side and the skill level on the other. And what happens is if the skill level is high and the challenge level is high, then students are highly likely to hit that state of flow. And that's what we want. We want them to hit a state of flow. But if, on the other hand, they have a low skill level and the challenge is low, they're just going to be bored, right? And if they have a low skill level and it's easy, they're just going to be apathetic. But what many students experience is a high challenge level. The book is too challenging. The language is too challenging. It's too much for them. And their skill level is low. And that produces anxiety. As teachers, we can teach students how to select books that will lead to a sense of control, arousal, and flow. We can also provide scaffolds through tutorials and language supports. We can encourage students to select books where they already have some background knowledge, thereby making the vocabulary even more accessible. And we can also encourage students to track their own progress so that they can see how things are improving as a reader. In the end, there is no magical formula for this. Reading is really hard, and some students will read reluctantly for a long time. But we as teachers can design specific ways to get students to get over some of that reluctance and some of the fear that they might be experiencing. And in the process, we begin to empower them as readers. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.